That would be a great way to start the show. Just you going. And we started the show with that. So how's it going?
Perfect.
What's up?
Good morning.
How you guys doing? Welcome back.
Pretty good. You had a lot going on. So
just I just got back. Maker camp. The last guest left 8 minutes ago. It's only Wednesday. No, yesterday was the last couple people that left. And we had a full house. I had two campers. Somebody slept in. Well, we had the Ameribraid guys. Three guys from Ameribraid came and stayed at the horse barn, which the heat just got turned on. So it's like a proper house now. The bathroom's not hooked up yet, but in the horse barn, the heat is on. So it's really, I was in there last night working late and I was like, why am I so hot? I'm usually cold in here. I was like, oh yeah, the heat works now. So the heat was turned on. And somebody slept on the floor of the big barn, the TV show barn, on a mattress. And campers were full and the house was full. But wow. Maker Camp was great this year. It was really great. We had a lot of new faces, some new disciplines. It was great. I mean, what is that to say? Year number 7. We did year 2020 was we did live streaming from various people's shops. So we weathered the storm. So we consider this really 6.5 this episode this weekend. It was great. It was great. We had timber framing, pottery. So Maker Camp was great. It was another great year. Everybody asked about you guys. Next year, we're going to have a booth of two 3D printouts of you two guys. We're going to send David, 3D DIY Dave, to go scan the both of you.
And just put a webcam right in the forehead so we can see what's going on.
We're
going
to record a couple of your quotes, and we're just going to do like a pull string on the back of a big 3D printout of you two guys. If you guys came, I'm not putting pressure on you. We still have a full year to put more pressure on you. But if you guys came, it'd be insane. I know you would have fun because everybody comes knows they would have fun. But if you were there, the fans would go bananas.
I don't know. I mean, yes, I agree that I would have fun. I would enjoy being there. I don't understand why you think it would be a big deal if I were there or we were there.
Because everybody asks about you. They're like, no, Bob and Dave.
People see me at things and people, I'm not that interesting.
I know. But
I mean, David's pretty interesting, but I'm not that interesting. I'm not sure
what I said when you tipped away. I said, if you guys made it there next year, or at the very least, if 3D DIY Dave did 3D printout scans of you two, like quarter size, everybody would love to see you guys there. This is my gentle pressure. We got a whole year for me to put harder pressure on you. But all the fans asked about you. They're like, no Bob and Dave this year. I'm like, they got their fill-in in Boston. I said, they're good for a little while.
It's got to be a different month. It's the only, October is not good.
Well,
I agree. You should move. How many people are there? 80,000 people?
We had 1,200 people.
All of those
people
should definitely change their plans and move the entire event to a different month for the two of us.
1,200 people.
Yep, 1,200, really?
Yeah,
that's crazy. So is it typically, like, I know you said there were new faces, but I mean, is it typically the same people or has there been a turnover or a different?
It's very much like Workbench Con where there's like a core of people that are always there no matter what happens. And that creates a really nice family atmosphere. Everyone said it's like a family reunion every year. You see cousins you love, aunts and uncles and cousins that you actually really love, and everybody has a good time. And every evening turns into a little bit of a drink fest. Everybody hangs out at the picnic tables under the pavilion. And it just turns into like a big, huge social hangout. And they have karaoke. I missed the karaoke because I had to get back over here. But I saw the karaoke. You'll see it on some of the reels where people are going bananas. DIY Huntress was carried in the air by a whole bunch of people. I missed that whole thing. I just see it on the reels. I don't know what was going on. But it was a great time. It's always a good time. In the fall, it's like cozy and warm, and there's apple cider and drinks and pizza, and it was fun. And then we had to do a big barbecue on Sunday. Will Shear and his whole team, they do this huge barbecue, and so they serve 400 or 500 meals. Wow. No, 180, because by that time it kind of thins out. And there's about 200, 180 meals, and we all just hang out at the picnic tables and talk. And then making knives connects the chefs to the blacksmithing, so that's really where the connection is. So the barbecue guys are all blacksmiths at the same time, making their own knives and kitchen cutlery. And so there's like a big connection there. So, and then food is making. So all the chefs are makers in their own way. Chris Green Money Fab, he makes all the barbecues. So there's these huge, big tube barbecues at like five doors. Chris makes all those. That's one of his things. That's one of the things he does. Chris Green Money Fab is his Instagram. And it was great. We did a weight loss challenge this year from the go-kart track, the 10 or so of us that we see each other at all these events. And we all put in $100, and whoever loses the most weight by Maker Camp gets the $1,000. And my buddy Mike Mucci, he lost 43 pounds. Incredible. Wow. Yeah. And I lost about 15. I'm still. And so I said, let's double down, everybody in the group except for Mucci, because he doesn't need it. Everybody put in $200 and we keep going. Mm-hmm. And to up the stakes, we haven't nailed the rules down yet. I'm still working with Keith Drennan from Blackthorn Concepts to nail down the rules. The one who loses the least amount of weight has to pay in like another $200. So there's a loser, there's a winner and a loser, a real loser. So we're trying to figure that. We're trying to figure that out. So you can't get lazy. Brutal. You can't get lazy. You got to try. You got to really try. So that little talent penalty.
Or you just don't show up next year. One of those.
Yeah. Now we might do this until like, we might do the next challenge to like January 1st or something. We're trying to figure out. So it's an honor system. Everyone's got to send in pictures to the group chat. So we're trying.
Nice.
But Maker Camp was great. It was really, it's always great. It's great. Big hangout. There's a big hangout here at the end of, at the end of the weekend, all the people that wanted to see the house. What I tell, because I'm 4 miles away, so I tell people, just go over there. You're welcome. Just go over there by yourself and just look around. I leave the doors unlocked and people just come down here. So it's really fun to get to see all the pictures on Instagram of my shop with all the various people that have visited my shop without me, because I'm too busy. Everyone's like, can I make an appointment to go see them? I'm like, just go over there. Don't worry about it. And anyway, it was great. It was really good. That last night, there was a lot of people here. We had fun. A lot of strange new faces. It was good. That's all I could say. It's your loss. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, I feel the loss.
Yeah. For sure. All right. Well, David, how many booth. People did you have at your house this weekend?
A zero.
Oh. And he's loving it.
Which was, that's the perfect amount of strangers.
Yeah. That is true. Well, what have you been up to, David?
Not Maker Camp. I got two videos, and there's actually three videos in the works, which is, I'm not real good at juggling three videos at a time, but the two that I'll talk about is, one I mentioned last week, we found a chair on the side of the road that I was turning into a more modern chair. Well, once we started tearing it apart, you could instantly see that it was going to be a table. So it has... the frame of this chair has this cool like cantilever angled thing. And as soon as we took off the seat in the back, it was like, oh, this is going to be an awesome side table. So we pivoted and working on that. That's definitely going to be the next video. And then at the rental, I decided that while I'm setting up shop, to make a video of if I were to start over, this is how I would do it. So we start with a very empty garage and say, this is the first tool that I would buy. This is the low end. This is the high end. Here's the difference. And then we throw the tool in there. And then we keep doing that. And then we're tallying up the numbers of setting up a new shop with low end tools and high end tools. So it's, I don't like shooting like shop setup or shop tips or tool videos, but I think this one's interesting and it's a unique experience where I have an empty garage and I'm setting up a new shop. So
yeah, I think that probably would be helpful for a lot of people getting their first space to work in, for sure. Is it focused on just the tool purchases or like furniture, workbench type stuff as well, or what?
It is. So what we're getting is a very unique journey, and it is how, if I were going to start over, these are the tools that I would buy in order, and I talk about if a budget tool is going to be good enough or if you should save up and get a little bit more of an expensive tool. And so And this is if you're going to be making furniture and art. So it is, if I had to start my journey, that's how it would go. It's always this video has the potential of doing well just because it's, you know, it's more of a helpful video than like a inspirational type video. And it's always, we make this joke, the videos that only take us a day to make are the ones that take off and do really well. But it's the video that I spent 3 weeks working on a design and a piece of furniture. Those are the ones that don't do well. So yep. we're already joking that this video is going to take off and do well. And it only took a day to shoot.
Gotcha. Well, but that's how it goes. I mean, that's good. If you can assume that it will do well.
Whenever I assume something, the opposite happens. So I probably jinx myself. But
yeah, it's usually the quick ones that don't take too much thought, which go viral.
There's just something about the simplicity of it and the relatableness of it. Yeah,
spontaneity kind of comes through.
And maybe because it's like just present in your mind. It's a thing that you put all of yourself at because it's quick and it's like now when it's, whereas the longer term stuff, maybe we overthink those things and maybe we like build them up into something bigger than they, not than they need to be, but you know, than they have to be.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's definitely something to that. My last video, which was the Casio keyboard video, gained like 4,000 plus new subscribers just from that one video. And I have to make sure that my next video kind of caters to that audience. So that's why the transformation of a chair from a table is going to be the next one. Cause you get all these new people and you don't want to turn them off with a stupid shop video.
Oh, that's what I do every week. I get new people and then I turn them off.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like a giant noodle grabber. That's stupid. I'm out. Yep.
Cool. Yeah.
I mean, and that's a hard thing. Honestly, if you have people come in from one thing, this is truly the problem with my channel. But, you know, you all see it too because you do a lot of different things. Where people come in through one video and they think, oh, well, this channel is about this thing that I just saw. And then it's almost never about that single thing because we all do lots of different stuff. And it's hard to keep people around for, I don't know, like the personality, the idea of the whole thing and not the specifics, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes. There's a YouTube guru named Patty Galloway, and he has this kind of concept of when you make a video, you're making a video either for your core audience, your casual audience, or your new audience. And you can combine those and have different formulas, you know, like... The ultimate video appeals to all three of those audiences where you're bringing in new people, but you're also pleasing the old people. But sometimes you just have to make a video that is for your audience that you know that's going to do well. And sometimes you have to make a video that's going to try to bring in new people because the old people eventually leave. And so you got to have this stream of new people coming in.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was going to recommend this channel later. It's called Tanks for Nothing, and it's an aquarium channel. And somebody mentioned this on our Discord. I don't remember who it was. And so I went over, and he said, you know, if you like planet aquariums, go check out this channel. And I do. So I went to look at it. Wonderful. Just wonderful videos. And they're like 20 minutes long, and it's a British guy talking about fish and plants, and he makes his own aquariums and he cuts the glass and he like sets up these beautiful little ecosystems that all work. It's just wonderful videos, fun to watch. He has little jokes and everything, but he puts out one video every 4 or 5 months or something, and he only has a handful of videos on the channel. Like it's not, you know, and each one of them has, I don't know, 800,000, 4 million. It's just like tons of views on this. And the thing that really which is great. I'm glad for him. And I enjoyed watching. I immediately subscribed. I'm like, this is the type of thing I love to watch and learn from and everything. But the thing that really struck me from watching this was that I tend to think about when I'm making a video, I tend to think about like, how do I keep the flow moving? How do I keep people engaged? How do I have a combination of like, I talk about a thing and then I go do a thing and do something different to drag them along to the next, here, let me explain the thing. And then I, you know.
Verse, chorus, verse.
Yeah. And his song structure in his video, entirely different. He's not trying to drag people along. He's not trying to like keep them, you know, I've got to see what happens. It's just this, here's what I did.
No retention hacks.
Yeah. It's just, here's what I did. And look at this cute little animal that's learning how to live here. And it's climbing this rock because like shrimp shouldn't climb rocks, but hey, it's climbing rocks. And why is it doing that? And let's,
that's,
you know,
cool.
It's a totally different thing. Mm. And I wasn't jealous watching this. I was kind of amazed at how something so different can do so well, you know,
mm-hmm.
And the fact that he takes months to make videos and he probably, I don't have any idea about what he does for work or like anything. I don't know anything about him, but the fact that he takes months to make a video and you can tell by the music and by the jokes and by the, you know, it breathes and it's not like a, hey, check it out. Today we're going to make an aquarium with it. Da, 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 da. It's not that, you know, it, I don't know. It was refreshing and just made me kind of like, wow, maybe I'm subconsciously trying to fit a mold that I think people really want to see. And maybe they don't, I don't know, you know?
Oh yeah. We all are for sure. We have this idea of what the ideal video is from a maker and viewer perspective. And we're always trying to fill that mold. I remember saying on this podcast years ago that ideally I would love to do one video a month where I make this amazing thing. I score the whole video and like it's, but I can't do that. It's not sustainable. That is way too much pressure on a particular video. And so I try to compress that down into a weekly or a bi-weekly video of like, okay, it's not a score, but I made the music. I'm making this thing that I put all my time in. But yeah, my pick of the week, and I'm not going to announce it just yet, is a new channel I had never seen before. And it's a guy that makes these things that I would never think I would want to make, but the videos are so good and just so beautiful, like I want to get into this. So I think I have a really good pick of the week as well.
Interesting. Well, that's cool.
Bob, what did you do this week?
I watched a bunch of aquarium videos.
no, how your, I mean, build, your build video.
Yeah, so yesterday I finished up framing the roof for the pool house. I got the, last week I did the big roof, like the building section, and then after that I did kind of a lean-to that's off the side of it to cover the pool equipment, and it's a slightly different kind of roof, but just uses like rafter hangers instead of just being framed in place. But yeah, I got all the roof done and sheathed and taped, and theoretically no water could get in, except for the giant holes where the windows and doors will be eventually. Water will get in there for sure. But otherwise, I mean, it's like kind of got a sealed up roof, which is pretty awesome. And doing the roof, I thought was going to be, I don't remember if I talked about this last week or not, but I thought it was going to be a problem because once I had to order 20-foot 2x8s for the roof, and I had 11 of them. And so when I got them in, I was like, oh, wait a second. I have to lift 11 20-foot 2x8s onto the roof and build the roof in place. I can't do it, you know, on the ground or anything and, like, lift it up there because it's just, it would be way too heavy. And so I really thought I was going to have a problem. But I was able to get all of the pieces up, like, notched. I don't even know how to explain this. I was able to get them all notched and up there and then assemble a side section because it overhangs. There's an eave, a 16-inch overhang. And so I had to assemble four rafters together as one unit and then push it off the side of the building. And so I was worried that I was going to push it and then it was just going to fall off the side of the building. Hmm. But the reason I did four was so that there would be the weight of three of them over the building and the weight of one of them off the building, you know, so it was like cantilevered. And that worked perfectly fine and didn't feel sketchy. And it was like, you know,
good.
Yeah. Physics did, were doing what they were supposed to do there, which was cool.
Did anybody comment on your last video mentioning Dukes of Hazzard?
I don't think so.
Okay. Because there's a moment in your, in the video that you put out where you're putting up a big sheet and then it falls and you did this amazing, it was the perfect edit where you paused it and then you left that still up on the screen and then you did your ad read. It was beautiful. And it reminded me of Dukes of Hazzard when a crash is about to happen.
That's
and they
true.
Freeze frame it. And they're like, we'll be right back with the, you know, the narrator comes on. It was so good. It was beautiful editing.
I got to give Anthony 100% credit for that. Anthony's been editing.
And, good job,
and
Anthony.
That is all him. And as soon as he sent that, because he kind of sent that to me as a joke and like put the ad read in there. And I'm like, no, this is perfect. Like, you have to do this. And we actually thought about taking the clip where the piece of wood falls over me and falls behind me and making it, drawing it out so that it happened over the course of the edit. But I think it was just funnier to have it paused. Mm-hmm. You know? And so we did that. But yeah, that was it. Anthony did a fantastic job with that edit. That whole video was, I thought, really good. And it's actually performed well, which is really encouraging. You know, I mean, it's as much as I would love to say that it doesn't matter to me whether a video does well, it does matter.
Definitely. It does.
Definitely
it matters a lot. And so when something does well, especially something that I physically put a lot of effort into and like I'm really happy with it, it felt really good to have something do well. It's done better than anything in the last long time. And even the comments, you know, I expected some negative, some like, you're an idiot, you're doing this wrong kind of thing. And really there wasn't any of that that I saw. I mean, I've been looking at the comments probably more than I typically do. And most of them were, you know, hey, you might want to try to do this next time, or, you know, you forgot to do this little thing, but hey, good job otherwise. And then a lot of just, please be careful. You know, we like that you're here. Don't kill yourself in trying to build a building, which was a lot of nice comments like that. But overall, I didn't feel like an idiot reading the comments, which is also nice, you know, to not feel like an idiot.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, but it actually, there were some legitimate things that I missed or that I did, you know, I could have done better, but like what I did worked, and having people point those out in a constructive way, in a helpful way, it felt really good. It felt good to be like, oh yeah, I forgot to put the cripples underneath the windows, but I can go do that. You know, I can do that now.
Oh, everybody listening to this podcast lives in a house where something could have been done better by the contractor.
Yeah. Somebody pointed out that, so I don't know if you'll remember, but on the back wall of this thing, I had to build the wall in basically four sections. So I built 2 8-foot tall wall pieces that I could lift up. I connected them together, and then I built a triangle wall that goes on top of that. I had to make it in two pieces. So there was like, you know, there's joints. There's like a cross up and across that connect these pieces. And a couple of people pointed out that when I put the sheathing on, I should have overlapped a piece of sheathing over that joint to force all four of those pieces to be, you know, more rigid together instead of it being a pivot point in two directions.
Yeah.
Makes tons of sense now that I see it. I'm like, oh, well, yeah, that would have been, I was trying to be efficient with the sheathing and just put a full sheet, stack a full sheet, and then just ended up that the seam ended up where it ended up. But there were two different people that commented that same thing, and both of them did it in a way that was helpful and not like,
you're so stupid, why didn't you do it?
It was like, hey, if you ever do this again, you'll have a much more rigid wall if you do it this way. Perfect way to give somebody constructive criticism. And it was helpful. And actually, I learned something from it. And, you know, I could have done it better, but I didn't feel like an idiot for doing it wrong. And I think that was really cool. I saw that several times in the comments. So if anybody made those comments or any comments at all, thank you, because this was actually an encouraging video to me. Not only that it did well, but that the response was like, helpful, mm-hmm. you know, and like mm-hmm. uplifting and so yeah, I've really enjoyed this process of building this thing, and I really enjoyed the process of that first video going out. So I'm hoping that they continue to do at least well enough to be justified, because that's always my fear with doing a multi-part big anything, is that maybe the first one does well, but then nobody stays interested. It's like with the Gia, like it's really hard for me to justify making a Gia video because people don't watch them anymore, you know, like, I mean, not people watch them, but not as much as early on.
No, with the house series and the car series, a couple of videos do really well, and then the next one doesn't do well at all. It makes no sense whatsoever, because you'd think they're engaged.
Yeah, but that's part of that. So I'm trying to, with the series, I'm trying to figure out how long do I stretch it out, but how compressed can I make it? You know, mm-hmm. how short can I make it, basically? How much can I fit into a video to make it, to cover a lot and get a lot done, but at the same time, I don't want to do 3 or 4 weeks of work for a 1 week video. You know what I mean? Like, you have to balance that. So I'm trying to figure that kind of spacing and timing out, and how I'm going to break up the rest of the work. I'm also going to run into winter soon, and it's going to be hard.
With the house video series, I always go until I feel like I have a good 30-35 minutes to put together. Mm. So it always feels right. I always get to a point where I feel like, okay, this is a good episode. I've gotten two or three major things completed, or at least well.
That was
one or two other things.
How do you balance the overall time with the like big checkbox kind of, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and there's not much getting completed in the house, obviously, but in these next couple of episodes in the series, the chimney will be done. He's just about buttoning it up. Patrick just gutted all the electric out of the house, and I'm building another big second floor section, which will be the last one that I need to do. So those are like three big little chunks of conversation that I could turn into an episode. So I'll probably have another episode by the end of this month. But that's it's just a feeling gets to a point. And this one's going to go on for a long time as long as I keep doing it. So I'm not overthinking it.
Yeah.
I think ultimately when it's all said and done, the series itself will be a nice chunk. And then I could also do a super edit, which just shows the beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, I've already started thinking about that too. It is like, you know, eventually when this is done, it's going to end up being a very long super cut of, you know, because it's just the framing. I think it was like a 20-something minute video, and that was like really just the first step, you know. So
yeah.
So I've been working on that, but I've also been working on this Arduino project, and I talked about it a little bit last week. I got this new board, this Uno Q from Arduino. It's not out yet. It's coming out in a couple of weeks, I think, or you can pre-order it in a couple of weeks or something. But I've been working with them, and this is not me bad-mouthing the whole process, but I think it brings up a good point that we had a topic we wanted to get to. So I've been working with this board that is new. It is not available for developers, which means all of the libraries. I was telling David about this earlier. So if anybody that doesn't know Arduino stuff, basically you have this board. This is not the one I'm talking about, but you have the standardized board. And then you connect other things to it. So you connect sensors, you connect motors, inputs and outputs to this standard board. And for these two things to talk to each other, there has to be some sort of a software component that explains the communication between them. Usually a library is what they're called. Now, these libraries have to be updated for new Arduinos, for new architectures. This thing is not out yet, so nobody can update their libraries yet. So I'm trying to build a project with all of these little doodads hooking into this thing, and I have no working software to connect these doodads to this thing, which is really, really frustrating, and it's nobody's fault. It's just this moment in time. You know, in a month, this will all be fixed. So I'm at a place where I have to make a project, but I can't because the pieces I need, it's like somebody hasn't developed the right screwdriver yet to be able to put this screw into that thing, and I cannot put those two things together. And so it's led me down this path of thinking about and fighting myself with what is the most important thing here? Is it the video output getting the idea across, or is it actually doing the thing that I said I'm going to do? I try to be really honest. Mm-hmm. So I want to do the thing that I said I'm going to do.
You need the money shot.
But so the thing I'm trying to get to here is I could fake this. I could fake these two things working together for a video, because in a few weeks or a month, they will work together. I'm not going to lie, but I don't want to do that because that's not me. I want to make them work together, or I want to show that it's impossible for them to work together. So I guess the lead in to the topic thing we had is, you know, the honesty of actually doing it is the thing that I personally, that's my bar. That's the thing that I would always go to first. Not getting the shot, not making the video and making it look like a thing is possible that's not possible. But I'm also, at the same time, I'm stuck right now, not being able to do the next thing that I have to do, not being able to meet a deadline for a sponsor, because I can't make it happen yet.
And it's on them, though, so they must understand.
Say that again?
It's on them, so they must understand.
Oh, yeah, they totally understand. This is no, like, there's nothing negative. It's just a struggle within me. I don't want to fake it. But it leads us to the topic thing that we were going to get to, which you brought up last week before we recorded, about you won't get credit for it. And it's a good example of, I won't get credit for doing, which is fine, I won't get credit for doing the true thing, for actually making it work when I could fake it for the video.
Right.
And that's fine, because my character is more important than the credit I get for my character, in my opinion. But that was from a thing that you said last week.
Yeah.
So what was your thinking around won't get
credit? Well, the idea of you won't get credit for it is something that I always, it's a little internal conversation that I have with myself anytime I make anything. And extreme examples, and now I got to be careful because somebody's going to be like, well, you got to have integrity and this and that and the other thing. And that's true. And I do. And I will. And I always try and put that into it. But there are certain aspects of, say, for instance, this is a bad example, but if I'm painting a wall panel and I paint the inside of the wall panel, if not for any other mechanical reason other than for aesthetics, sometimes you paint two sides of a piece of wood just so it evenly will react to the paint, right? But if you're going to put up, if you're going to make a dresser, for instance, and the back of the dresser is going to be the same walnut, beautiful oak as the rest of it versus just a piece of Luan that's going to be against the wall. So you're going to put a $100 sheet of plywood on the back of it. You're not going to get credit for it. And that's what I always ask myself. If I'm working within a budget and if I'm making a whole bunch of things that have to go against the wall and it's another $500 in plywood to put the fancy plywood on the back of it, I'm not going to get any credit for it, but it's come directly out of my profit margin. So that's why I always say, you're not going to get any credit for it. This week, Ryan and I were working on, I don't know if I talked about it, I probably talked about it last week. We did this big project where I had to make all these props. Not a lot, but it was a lot of work, but it was only three big props. And one of them was this boat, which I'll probably turn into a video. But as we're working on the boat, I think Ryan might have said, are you going to epoxy the inside? Because I epoxied cracks on the outside just so that it looked like one sealed object. And I was like, I'm not going to get any credit for it. It's going to take up time and it's going to take up material. There's no reason to epoxy the inside. He got to the point where in his head, it should be a real boat. I'm like, it's not a real boat. It's going to hold fish for display. So I'm going to take my time and epoxy the inside. I'm not going to get any credit for it. It's completely pointless. This is a better example. We put a platform in the boat. And it was so complicated to paint the inside of the boat because it was many ribs, many layers. The whole thing had this big rib system in it. And I made the ribs of the boat have a bar across to carry this platform. So it wasn't a typical boat that you could hop in. It's a boat that if it was filled up with water, that's where the platform would be. That's how I described to Ryan. He's like, I go, we're going to put a platform in it. Should the platform follow the gunnels and have the curve? I go, no. Imagine this boat gets filled up with water and freezes. That line is going to be where the platform is inside the boat. So I made each one of the ribs. And so I put the layer in and still parts of the interior showed because it curved up on each end. And so I painted just what showed. And when I took the interior out, Ryan's like, you don't want to paint the whole inside? I said, I'm not going to get any credit for it. We got a million other things to do. I said, I could take the time to paint between all the CNC ribs. It's going to take me probably 2 hours to get it right and keep wiping up the goo because it's going to be runny. I said, but we're not going to get any credit for them. We've got to keep moving along. Another example was when we built these big flats. We did a rib down the middle and two ribs, and it was 7 feet tall. So we had a rib in each end. So we had like a big, we had a vertical and two horizontals to structure. He's like, should there be three or four horizontals? I was like, it's going to be fine. It's going to be set up for 3 hours. They're not going to get any extra credit for all the extra ribs you want to put in it. So there's an example of not getting extra credit. You're not going to get the credit. The customer's not going to slap you on the back and say, great job. I'm glad you added four ribs inside of that and took money out of your profit margin and gave it to me so the things blow over and don't break. They're going to blow over anyway. And they didn't break. Nothing broke for the amount of material we put in it. So that's
do you know where this, originated, this thought process, this saying, or?
Yes, because I worked with an interior designer. I thought of it years ago. Me and David Welder were working with the interior designer many, many, many times. I keep picturing the apartment I did for Leonardo DiCaprio, where we would do certain things and, you know, I wanted to do my best, but I also wanted to make money. So there were certain times and like the idea of putting a walnut back on the back of a cabinet or the back of a shelving unit. Versus not doing it. Like using, we were using these sheets of veneer that cost $550 each. This Wenge veneer, there was $500 each sheet of veneer. And so I was not veneering the bottom of shelves. I was not veneering the back of some doors. I was not veneering definitely the back of the cabinets. And so I would just say to myself, I'm not going to get credit for putting this here. And all I was going to do is take money out of my profit margin. And so therein lies the kind of the genesis. It was probably the summer of 2009 when I was working on Leonardo DiCaprio's apartment and we did a whole bunch of cabinet stuff. And he picked this veneer that, and he picked it because I gave him five choices and he picked this one. It was my fault. Should have given him the choices of the veneers that I got from Home Depot.
I think this philosophy is healthy for what we do. But 28 years ago, the professor, the head of graphics department at college, just drilled into our brains that the details matter. Like,
I agree. And that's why I preface it with, like, I don't want to sound like a hack, but when it gets right down to it and you're doing a logo for a friend, are you going to redraw the whole logo or are you just going to pick a font that looks like it? You know, those are the moments where you got to really ask yourself, I could redraw every one of these fonts. Well, every letter character in this logo, or I could just go get a good screen grab of it somewhere and no one's going to know the difference. Go ahead.
It's just so weird how one experience or something somebody says decades ago just sticks with you. And so I approach every project thinking it's going to be picked up, examined, judged, picked apart, and looked at. And so I do make walnut backs for my projects. I do make sure that the bottom feet look good in case somebody flips it over and upside down. And I do this to a fault without a doubt. My brother is like, nobody is going to see this. Why are you spending so much time on it?
He's got to start using the frame. You're
I
not
know it's
get
there.
Credit for.
Yeah.
Well, that brings that. There's a story. So when we were working, this is, you guys are going to laugh at this. We always joke this phrase my dad said. We were on a job site, and my brother Joey said to my dad, this was years ago when we all worked together at a construction site, and my brother Joseph said to my father, no one's going to see it. Like he used like a used 2x4 with like nail holes in it, and my brother goes, no one's going to see it. Like, don't complain. I don't need to use new stock. And my father said, no one sees your underwear, but you change it every day. And, you know, that's... And so it's kind of like a little bit, it's a fight. It really is a struggle. Mm-hmm. It's like I said, saying this, I'm going to sound like a hack. And a lot of people think I'm a hack anyway. I could care less. But the idea also really comes into play when you're dealing with tight margins. And are you going to spend all that extra money? It's really when it came down to the $500 a sheet for the veneer. And that's really where I'm like, I got to really be frugal because every sheet of veneer that I buy, even if I'm only going to use 1 square foot of it, that's another $500 out of my profit. And that was 20 years ago when it really meant a lot. You know, it still means a lot, but it meant a lot more back then when I was living in the city. And, you know, literally, there was a time in my life for about 15, 20 years where I literally made exactly the amount of money that I needed to pay my bills every single month. And I just always was lucky. I had a little bit of credit card cushion, but that's when I used to balance my checkbook. I don't balance my checkbook anymore. I just look at the total and say, there's enough to cover everything I just wrote, versus literally down to the penny. Like I could bounce a check if I wasn't balancing my checkbook. I went down to zero at the end of every month. And that was that time when I was like, I'm not going to buy another $500 sheet of veneer because mm-hmm. the bottom of these shelves should be done. Then I'm just going to paint them dark and that'll be good enough.
What's really interesting to me about this is that last week we started talking about, I mean, before we recorded this, you won't get credit for it line. And I think all three of us are talking about three different things.
Yeah,
similar.
Well, that's
they
that's
overlap.
True. Yeah.
But I think we all looked at it from a slightly different perspective as to what that meant.
I knew that would be the way. That's why I brought it up to you guys before we started last week's episode.
Hmm. That's really cool. So I want to respond to the way that you all both think about it, because it's different than the way I was thinking about it. And then I'd love to hear your responses as well. But I'm definitely a function over form person, you know, like, and so for me to not have a walnut back on a thing that will never get turned around, that's a no brainer. Like, why in the world would I do that? You know, because it's just, if it doesn't make it stronger, if it doesn't make it whatever it's supposed to do,
you're not going to get credit for it. There you go.
Why would that even matter? But at the same time, when, you know, you talk about like the details of like caring about the small little pieces, I kind of feel that in a different way. Like that, yeah, like, I don't know, clearances around a 3D printed thing. It could be sloppy. It could be tight.
Yeah.
Spend a little bit more time, it will be tight and it will look nice and the thing will fit correctly instead of like, close enough, you know. It's interesting because I feel kind of both of those things in different ways. Like I would never lose money to have a back covered in a certain wood or to like, you know, a lot of times I won't paint the extra side of the thing because I'm just trying to get the video done. And for me, the product is the video, not the piece or the whatever.
That's the other thing too, is it's really it's a case by case basis. I mean, there are certain things I fall completely in love with and I'll go to the mat for it no matter what it is, whether it's for a client or whether it's for me. There are other things like a boat that has to be done in 2 days for a fish display that's going to get shown for 2 hours at the New York City Seaport. And that's where I'm like, I'm cutting every corner I can because I'm working against the clock and I want margin here. So it depends on what it is.
Yeah. Whereas the way I was looking at it, like I said before, is about it's more of an integrity thing. You know, do I want to be truthful in making a video and actually showing that it worked or it didn't work or that I'm good at something or I'm not good at something versus just like it would be easy. Just so everybody's clear, it would be super easy to make videos and make us look like we know everything. Editing can make you look like a genius and like
100%.
You know. And so I think the fact that we don't all do that all the time says that we care a little bit about, you know, like honesty and stuff. But that's the way I was kind of looking at this, is that, you know, the credit being like, I don't even know how to say it, like personal credit. You're thinking credit like as in you're not going to get extra money for it if you're doing a job.
That's true, but also you're not going to get a pat on the back and saying, I'm glad you did such a good job by veneering the bottom of these shelves. Right. The client's not going to care. You're not going to get, they're going to love what they see, but they're not going to love it anymore because you veneered underneath the shelves. I would, and by the way, I would veneer under the shelves that your eyes could see. If it was like, I always look like this, you look down, what does the shadow of your eyes cover? When you look up, what does the shadow of your eyes see? And that's, so I always think anything above eye level gets the full max. Anything below eye level gets chintzed if it can be chintzed for financial.
I understand that everything is a case by case basis, but does the general philosophy change if you're making something for yourself, something for your living room?
100%. I try and do as cool as I can because I'm going to be like, look, I even put walnut on the back because I'm so hire me for something, but don't look at the back of yours.
Right.
That's why I say I'm going to get, I'm sure if this was a YouTube video, I'd get skewered in the comments by all the guys that, you know, don't make a living by making stuff, but make a living by making videos for themselves. So,
what about you, David? How would you answer that question?
Oh, if it's for me, it needs to be perfect or it goes in the fire pit. I mean,
but I would imagine you would do that for other people as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't make things for other people very often. It's something I want to dip my toes into here real soon. But it is really hard for me to get away from the details matter philosophy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. There's even if nobody would ever look at it, it's still that pride of like, again, this is to a fault. I try to make things as perfect as possible. When something doesn't go right, it emotionally hurts every single time. I screw up something on the router. I got a chip out, and there's no way to fix it without going back. It always hurts every single time. And it's because I care about every little thing. And maybe Jimmy's saying I won't get credit for it. Maybe that's the little thing that I need to let go of that.
Yeah. And again, just to reiterate, credit basically means a pat on the back from the client or the viewer and a pat on the back financially. It means both things. It can mean both things. It can mean whatever. And, so, like I said, working with someone like Ryan, who's really overthinks things, and he knows it. I'm not throwing him under the bus. It's almost crippling in some cases. And I'm me to be the devil on his shoulder, saying, "Let's just move through it. It doesn't matter. When people look at the overall picture, they're going to be like, we can't believe we asked you 4 days ago for these four display pieces, and here they are, nearly as perfect as the AI images we provided. Thank you." They're not going to stop and go, "Well, you know what? The 1825 font wasn't exactly what it was supposed to be. I'll send you guys pictures. There's a font. He sends me the file and the font for the 1825, which is a prominent number having to do with the marketing of this whole thing. It's the 200th anniversary of something." And I go, "Okay." He sends me the font and he doesn't send it to me outlined, so I can't go right to the vinyl cutter and cut it out. So I go through all my fonts. I find a font that's close enough. And I never called him, because if I called him and said, "Hey, where's the actual font?" he would be like, "Wait, we have to use that exact one because that's the exact one." And I didn't use his font, and I cut out the vinyl. I also cut out some choices, because once it got installed, these letters were applied later. So I gave him a Ziploc bag with a couple of letters cut out in thin wood and a couple of letters cut out in vinyl. I said, "Whichever works best in the setting, you'd use either one." And then he sends me a message from the set, and he goes, "You didn't use my font." I said, "I know I didn't." I said, "But no one's going to know the difference except for you." I said, "Nobody." And I go, "This is the example," because he kept having it be exactly like the AI image that they provided. I was like, "You and I have to constantly keep opening our phones to remember what the image looks like and compare." I said, "If we never opened our phones, our brain would say it's exactly as I remember it. You're thinking this is a game of match game and this has to fit exactly as an overlay. That's never going to happen." I said, "If you and I are closer to it than anybody that's ever going to be involved in this whole project, you and I are closer to it, and we can't remember whether that font had a serif at the bottom of the one or not. You and I can't remember that. And we're closer to it than anybody." I said, "The client's not going to be that close to it either."
The problem with that, and I do this all the time, if I'm trying to recreate something and use like the same font, you have this, especially when it comes to fonts, you have this image of what it's supposed to be, and it's already perfect. And so you got to recreate that. And if it's off, the serifs are off, or there's a different weight to it, it doesn't feel right. Even though if you never saw the first one, that second one would be absolutely fine. But you already have this image of what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because perfect is just the way that you saw it, not that it's actually perfect. It's just the original, like the... So you said something a minute ago that I wanted to point out. So you were talking about, David, when something goes wrong, when the router does something it's not supposed to or whatever, you know, when something doesn't go like you expect, it's like emotional to you. And it's fascinating to me how similar the three of us and how different the three of us are. Because my immediate reaction when you said that was like, no, that's an opportunity to solve something. I don't know why, but like... when I have stuff like that go wrong, there's a little bit of like the chaos is a little bit exciting to me because it is like, okay, well now how do we get around the fact that I just accidentally cut off the corner of this thing that I really shouldn't have cut off or whatever. And it's, I don't know. It just, that caught me because I would have a different emotional reaction to that exact same thing. Not better. Oh. I'm not saying that in any way whatsoever. It's just, I get excited by the, like, I really like it when I can't figure something out. And I noticed the other day with this Arduino thing, I was walking around in circles, deep in thought, trying to figure out, like, what is another way that I could do this? And I ended up walking in circles so long that Jenny was like, are you okay? Is something, is something really bothering you? And I'm like, no, I'm just thinking about work. And I just went back to walking. But I enjoy that. Here's a puzzle that I don't know how to solve. I enjoy it to a point, and then it gets really old.
right.
But I think I would have that reaction to the thing that you just said.
So I think my brain is trying to sabotage me all the time. I am looking for something to go wrong so I can give up on the project and start a new fresh one.
Mm.
Like, yeah, when I have something go wrong, that is my opportunity to shelve it and start the next thing. But I do feel that it's the little problems that you have to solve throughout the project that actually keep you going. As long as if it's not a tragic mistake, those little hurdles are actually kind of fun and keep me engaged in the project. So I feel both sides of that.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, any other thoughts on this?
So one more little thing that I thought about when Jimmy was talking is I'm currently working on this serving tray, and it's got four sides, but the corners are a big 2-inch radius. So the corners are their own piece. And when I was you're working on one little individual corner. It's made out of solid walnut, and I'm trying to get the curve just right on the inside and the outside. And when you're working on that one piece, that's all you're focused on, I can tell that it is not a perfect 2-inch radius. I sand it away a little bit too much here or whatever. And I'm like, I just got to push through and it's not perfect. I'll just move along. And then when I get the whole thing glued up, you can't even tell because I'm not focused on that. I'm not hyper focused on that one little thing. And that's definitely a thing. Like when I just push through and just move on to the next thing, when I say I'm not going to get credit for that and just move on to the next thing, sometimes I'll be like, maybe I'll go back and I'll try to see if I can fix that. But once you see the bigger picture, like, oh, there's no reason to go back. I was fussing about that too much and I'm glad I pushed through and moved on.
Yeah, that's what I was telling you guys with, you know, with my recent example with Ryan is, like I said, you're literally focused on every little aspect, whether the joint should be this way or this way. It doesn't matter. You're not going to get credit for making the most perfect choice. Let's just move through it. And by the time we're done, you're going to look at the overall picture, which I just sent you guys. And by the way, where I sent you, there's like a bar wrap that we made that covers a bar. The one where the letters, that's my Long Island accent, the letters.
Letters.
The letter. In that picture where it shows the two bar wraps, the one on the right side of the image is the AI image that the designer provided. And the one on the left is the one we made. And Ryan was just showing me how
much
he nailed the colors. And you can't tell which image is real. The darker image is the one we made. And if you compare the fonts.
Yeah, well, there's a different weight to the fonts. So
that's it.
I'm discarding this whole thing. Yeah.
But when he called me back and goes, you didn't use the fonts I sent. I said, well, it wasn't in my library and I couldn't figure out which one it was. So I just made a quick decision and moved through it. And he goes, I actually like your choice better. So I was like, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But he gets locked in because he chose that and he moved it basically in his mind. He's like, okay, that's the one we're going to use. Any deviation from that's a little OCD. That's not necessarily anything outside of that. But he did give me credit for picking a better font than he would have chosen or the one that he chose.
Yeah. So similarly, I wanted to point something out. When I was in art school, one of the things that I can't remember what class this was in, but one of the professors would tell us to squint and he would do it at different times. I think it was like a 3D. Anyway, he would tell us to, we would do work And then we would, you know, put everything up on the wall or on screen for the whole class. And you'd do like a presentation for the whole class and everybody would look at everybody's work. And so he would have us look at it. And then he would have us take like a few steps back and look at it again. And we'd have another conversation about it. And then from that second place, he would have a squint. Everybody squint and then tell me what you see. And that was a really good exercise for me because it makes, when you squint at something, it cuts down on the detail, obviously, but it cuts down on the amount of color. It changes the values, the highs and lows of an image or whatever you're seeing. And it really breaks it down to a simpler thing. And especially in the case of a logo, if you're trying to get something that will work in the most situations possible, you want to be able to see it from far away. You want to be able to see it in low light. You want to be able to see it when you don't have enough detail to actually, you know, read small text and stuff like that. But I think that same idea, you can apply that to everything. Like you were talking about the radius corner. That mattered when you were focused, when you were looking at that radius corner. But when you squint or you back up a few feet, you see it in the context of the larger thing. And it can't possibly stick out because it's surrounded by other things that are also probably imperfect. But you're seeing the overall shape of the thing. And this really hit me one time. I'm gonna embarrass myself just a little bit. I was in college after this, and the squint thing was in my head all the time. And I was waiting at a bus stop in Savannah, Georgia, to go to work. And I saw a girl walking down the road towards the bus stop. She's like 100 yards away or something. And I'm like, oh, she looks cute. She's like 100 yards away. I want to point that out. I'm like, oh, she looks cute. She's walking down here. And by the time she gets to the bus stop, I turn and she was easily in her 60s. Easily. Mm. But I couldn't tell that because she was so far away that I just made an assumption that the little detail that I can see, she's probably cute. She's probably the type of girl that I would be interested in until she got close enough and I saw the detail. This is not somebody I'm interested in.
Bob's ageist.
That right there made, like, it really locked that into my head. I mean, obviously, I remember that story from whatever 20-something years ago, 30-something years ago, that the distance, the detail you have from anything changes what you actually think that you're seeing. Mm-hmm. And that's an important thing to remember, especially if you're making something for other people to look at. Like, how close are they going to be? Well, how much does it matter? What are they looking through? What's the lighting that they're going to be have around this thing?
One of my interior designers that I used to work with in the city all the time, he would say to me, he goes, it looks fantastic. He goes, just squint. That's what the client sees. He goes, you just spent your life literally seeing every detail of this thing. Don't obsess. He goes, the client's going to just squint. That's what the client sees. They don't understand how much time and energy you just put into this. That being said, you don't want to do anything shabby and scrappy, but you don't want to also obsess and hold up the job over tiny details that only will matter to you.
But why is it that we know that the client doesn't see the details that we do, but why is it that we need somebody else to say that to us out loud, even though we know it? And why does that stick?
Because we're the closest to it and we're just embarrassed to put out something that's subpar. And when somebody comes in the room and goes, that looks amazing. And you're like, really? It looks like crap. Well, if you like it, then the third person comes in the room and goes, oh my God, you made this? I'm like, yeah, but it's got the glue drip here. I got to scrape out.
Yeah.
No. It looks good. Well, I really wanted it to be rounder, but you know, this is the best I can get. Shut up. It looks great.
I think that's partially because we are made to care about different things, you know, and like, that's good. That's why we're unique and stuff. My friend Matt Bober is a painter, and I'm going to send you, I've told you guys about him before, but I'm going to send you his Instagram. He is incredible. And the amount of detail in these paintings, you will think that they are not paintings. And he is somebody that will not move ahead unless it looks 100% real. Mm-hmm. I mean, 100%.
I think artists that can create realists are born that way.
Yeah. He cares about an entirely different thing than I do, you know, when it comes to a creation. And I think he's a really good example of, like, sometimes it's absolutely worthwhile. You get credit for going really deep and spending the time to make it right, because his paintings are just insane. And he does, so he builds these still lifes out of like all this weird stuff that he finds. And it's like, antique things and old toys and skulls and animal bones and all this. He builds the actual still life and then paints it exactly. And I've been in a studio and I've seen the still life next to the painting. And I mean, there's no like, it's close enough. It is exact. And then he puts these backgrounds behind the object that's, you know, there's some like colored stripes or a different color background or some like ombre, you know, he puts a background to a realistic foreground, which is, it's fascinating. But he does something that I could never even dream of doing, which is pretty crazy.
It's pretty incredible.
I'll put him in the show notes as well. I have, including him, I have four things to recommend today.
I got two. I couldn't decide, so I'm going to give two recommendations here.
I have one.
Jimmy, you can take the week off if you need to.
No, I got one good one.
Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters, unless you all have any other thoughts on this.
We don't want to. That's a good discussion.
Yeah. Big thanks to everybody over at Patreon. I had a conversation with a friend of mine, another creator, last night about Patreon, and we were just talking about it as a mechanism, and I was reminding him at how grateful we are for the Patreon support for this show. Like, I have Patreon for I Like to Make Stuff, and it's great. I love the people there and everything, but it's not substantial. It is the thing we do for this show. And so I'm really grateful that we have enough people that, you know, support us to make this happen and like what we do and everything. So big thanks to everybody at every level over at Patreon that supports the show. Everybody gets the after show. Last week we had a little mix up with the show after show going online. We got it fixed. But so if you don't have the after show, maybe you had a tease of it last week. Everybody gets to see it for a little bit. Anyway, it will be correct this week, I'm pretty sure. But everybody at every level of a Patreon gets the after show, separate podcast feed. There's video for it and stuff as well. But huge thanks to our top supporters. That's Works by Solo, Warren Works, The New Janky Workshop, Scott at Dad Yourself DIY, Rich at Low End Design, Pete Rondo, Odin Leather Goods, Nick Ryan, Michael Manegin, Matthias Garnell, Making with Mog, Corey Ward, Chad from Mancrafting, Albers Woodworks, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc.
There. Few of those guys are at Maker Camp.
Oh,
just
cool.
Saying. Just saying.
Just saying. Yeah, they
just work. Saying.
Just saying.
Should have been
Wednesday.
There.
Just saying. Yeah. Cool. You can go to patreon.com/makingit and join up to get the after show or just to help us out. We would appreciate
it. Bob, did you want to pick a random person? I cut you off.
Oh, yeah. I haven't. How about Theo Montague Andrews? Probably said that wrong. Montague? But that's a really cool name, Theo. Thank you for supporting the show.
Thank you, Theo.
Very grateful.
Yeah. I just sent you guys my pick, and it's this guy who came up yesterday. I listened to three of his videos. I usually listen while I work. I'm kind of like a podcast video guy. Just my phone is somewhere lost in the room and I'm listening. But he goes through, let me see, I'll tell you what his name is. I can't remember his name particularly, but his name is Michael Gridley. And he does an analysis of why certain corporations go out of business. And the video I sent you is the example of Radio Shack, but he does Pizza Hut is one that I saw. And there was another one that I saw, but he does the financial analysis and the marketing analysis about why a company like Pizza Hut would go out of business and the market changes and all those types of things, which I thought was really, really, really cool. I really got a lot out of listening to it. He always does the rise and fall of GoPro, which I saw months ago, which I didn't even realize. He did one on Vlasic Pickles, Sears, what went wrong, Panera Bread. It's just Cracker Barrel. It's really interesting. It's just really interesting to hear all the subtle market changes that people are sometimes acutely aware of or not aware of at all. And those are the types of things that change. And, you know, we're all going through the market changes in our business. And it's like, where can I really pick up what's going wrong and why are the things changing and what am I not rolling with? And, you know, there's a lot of things I'm not rolling with because I'm an old man, but how could I use what's changing to my advantage? And that's really why I'm studying this kind of stuff. I don't have any answers, but I'm hoping to find some.
Speaking of Sears, I saw a video the other day, and I don't have a link to it, but it was one of those people who go walk through abandoned buildings and, like, you know, take video of like what it looks like. And they went to the old Sears, I think it was the Sears headquarters, and it was
that
like
big campus, right?
Yeah, it's like huge.
Yeah, just and everybody's gigantic. Desks are still full of stuff. It's crazy.
It is nuts. I'm like, what a big building with all the stuff. It was like everybody just got up and walked out.
Yeah.
So weird. But
that's what
anyway.
Happens.
That was a very cool video. All right, David, what you got?
So I got two picks. The first one I wanted to, it's been my on my list of things to recommend for a while. And it's an HBO show called The Last Rite. This lady got the plans for the last Frank Lloyd Wright home. So he designed this home that was going to go in this particular spot. And he passed away. And this lady who owns that lot got those plans and built a brand new Frank Lloyd Wright home, but tried to stick to the original plans as much as possible. Codes and construction techniques change. But it's like a four part series on HBO. It's really good. And it's it deals with a lot of the issues that we talk about.
A documentary?
Yeah, it's a documentary. Yeah.
Oh, great. That sounds cool.
And it deals with like a lot of things that we talk about. Like she wants to stick with the original specs, the original materials so much, but it's almost impossible because of the way materials are now and things. But all I kept thinking, I kept yelling at the TV saying, if Frank Lloyd Wright was still alive today, he would use this new process. He would would take advantage of these things. I don't know. It's really good. So there's my first pick. Go watch it if you have HBO. My second pick just kind of blew me away, came out of nowhere. And you know those box, like the fancy books, trying to get my link here. When you buy a fancy art book and it comes in like a little box and it slides out of the box, you know, a little display case.
Oh, yeah.
This guy makes boxes and out of cardboard and fabric. And they are so well done. Like I've never planned on making a cardboard box. But after I watched this video, I'm like, I want to make a cardboard box because he makes it look so fun. He's very approachable. I got a feeling this channel is going to blow up one day because his videos are so good. And these boxes are beautiful.
I saw that thumbnail. It showed up on mine as well. And I didn't look at it to see like what it actually was. That's cool. Let's see. I'm trying to find who recommended this. Yeah. All right. So Matt Bober is one of my recommendations. He's a friend of mine and painter. One of the other things is the Tanks for Nothing, the Aquarium Planet Aquarium channel. It's really good. Another thing is a product that I saw a news article on called Superwood. Have you heard of this?
Mm-mm.
So this is fascinating to me. It's not like you can't buy it yet, but it's a process that I don't know who came up with it. But there's a company built around it now, and they're starting to figure out how to turn it into a product. Basically, they take natural wood and they squish it. So they get rid of all of the empty space chemically. They compress the wood down and they get rid of all the empty space in the cellular structure. And so it gets, let's see, I think it gets 80%. There's an 80% reduction in thickness.
Wow.
And they do this with a chemical. It's not like resin bonded. It's chemically they squish it somehow, but it becomes stronger than steel and lighter than steel, lighter than wood, I guess. There's a spec sheet that has all this information that I'll put in there. It's fascinating, though, because they take and they're also doing it with bamboo. So they're taking things that are sustainable and can be grown quickly, and they're making material that is stronger and lighter than steel to potentially like replace steel in a lot of situations. I just think that's really cool. That's an interesting kind of work that somebody's doing. So that's one thing. The other one was sent by one of our Patreon supporters, Sam Mulliner. And I can't remember the name of the channel, but this guy makes transforming chess pieces. So when you play chess, you can move a pawn up to a certain point. You know, if you get it across the board, you can like turn it into, you get one of your pieces back. So you can have it replaced with another piece. So he made chess pieces that, and made a special board so that when they go to a certain spot, this magnet underneath engages stuff on the inside of the chess piece and it transforms. It like pops open and another shape comes out of it. And what? He made different versions for the different pieces in chess. And then he took them to a chess club and taught these chess people how to play this new variation of chess. And it's awesome. It is so cool. Like, it's wow. Engineering that is past what I even understand. It's a really good video too. But chess, so people, definitely go check that out. Because he compresses all this stuff into a little piece. And on the outside of it, they all look exactly the same. They all look like pawns. And then it just goes.
Did you send that link to the chef?
Yeah, I will. Yeah. Cool. You guys got anything else?
Oh, I'm going to be at the Klingspor event this weekend. If this is, we put this out on Friday. If you're in Hickory, North Carolina, come see me and Derek at Klingspor. Klingspor? Klingspor? I can never remember how to say. Klingspor woodworking event in Hickory, North Carolina. I'll be there this weekend. George Von Driska, I think Izzy's going to be there. We're going to have fun.
Cool.
That's it.
Come see. Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And
thank you.
Catch you next time.
Thank you. Love you.